Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today on Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. For those of you who aren't aware, we do have a Facebook Live page on LA Talk Radio. If you go to Facebook, and you can actually join myself and our guest here today, or you can find the video live on Facebook Live later on in the week as well. So today, before we jump into introducing you to our guest, I would like to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States. They provide executive search, as well as temporary and payroll staffing options, and also traditional retained as well as contingency search. So please do keep Markham Search in mind for all of your potential staffing needs. Today we have with us on the show, Habib Siddiqui. Habib Siddiqui, D.O., FaceMip, is the co-founder of Beehive of Healing Integrative Medical Center based in Los Angeles, and is a clinical instructor of family medicine at Western University of Health Sciences. He is the author of Within, A Spiritual Awakening to Weight, to Love and Weight Loss, as well as the foreword to Gwyneth Paltrow's It's All Good, and the publisher of the health and well-being journal, MegaZen. To learn more about him, you can visit beingclarity.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Siddiqui, for joining us today.
It's a privilege. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell our listeners who might not be familiar, they might not be in LA or be familiar with you and the work you do, how was it that you came to create Beehive and to go into the integrative medicine that you do?
Yeah, I started actually wanting to become a patent attorney. What a detour. My background was in microbiology.
Okay.
And I had a minor in chemistry and medical technology. And the intent was to just go in and to become a patent attorney. And this was in the 90s. And one show just created such a shift for me, and that was a show with Noah Wiley, the ER.
Oh.
And I just, for whatever reason, just one episode of this show, and I started volunteering at MLK, Martin Luther King Hospital, in Watts. And I had a couple of interactions, and I realized that instead of patent law, I wanted to become a physician. And I applied, I got in, and I never looked back. I went through the whole training program, and I did my residency in family practice and OMM, or osteopathic manipulative medicine. And osteopath, it's sort of it's an MD and a chiropractor put together. So you write prescriptions, but you also can do adjustments and so forth. And I wanted to do that intentionally because I wanted to have other modalities other than just prescribing medications or doing surgery.
Okay.
And finished my residency program. And throughout the residency, second year of medical school, actually, I had some personal health challenges, which I included in the book, The Clarity to Cleanse. I published all my medical records. I was diagnosed with testicular cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was during the time that Scott Hamilton nearly died.
Oh, yeah.
The gold skater, and Lance Armstrong lost part of his brain, part of his lungs to testicular cancer, had to go through significant chemotherapy and so forth. So it was really scary. So I took some time. I started traveling to India, to Europe. I studied yoga, Ayurvedic medicine, German new medicine, and various different modalities that somehow I never learned in medical school. So it opened up a whole new realm for me of the possibilities that they were available. And so when I graduated, there was a show. This gentleman, who did a movie called Dinner with Andre, Andre Gregory.
Okay.
At that time, his wife had transitioned because of ovarian cancer, and he had a show in Red Cat, right down in Los Angeles, downtown L.A. And in the conversation, I shared with him how that movie really affected me. And he said, well, what was it about the movie? And I told him that, you know, the part that you were in Poland, and you had this group of people, artists, musicians, that they would come together, and there was this improvisation.
Mm.
And in that conversation, the name Beehive was born, which is hive, a gathering of beings, B-E,
oh, I love that.
For the purpose of healing.
I had no idea. So Dr. Siddiqui was referred to me many years ago.
Right.
I had personally suffered, I didn't know it at the time, it was mercury poisoning.
Right.
And if it hadn't been for you and the amazing referral I received, I had been sick, I think it was 8 or 12 weeks straight.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness we were introduced and even recently again, I was in the hospital about a month and a half ago, and I went through every traditional medical test you could imagine. I even went to my normal acupuncturist, and nothing worked. And then sure enough, you and I hammered it out and you said, Jen, here's what's going on. And I love that we're at a point in society where you can integrate kind of the metaphysical and the emotional aspects of it. I was talking to a gentleman yesterday who was sharing with me, he's a very successful entrepreneur, the concept of just accepting something. You know, we have these emotions of fear, anger, sadness, happiness. And by just saying, I accept that I feel sadness, I accept that I feel fear or afraid, you're able to heal yourself. And I love how integrative everything you do is and how you've kind of spun things and found ways to make health more accessible in a different way than it traditionally has been.
Absolutely. I think it's, you said it eloquently, the idea that our physical body is disconnected from our mind, it's at best naive, if not reductionistic. Now we know that our body and mind, they're a continuation of each other, right? And part of my journey was, I got a master's in spiritual psychology with emphasis in consciousness, health, and healing. And for past 12 years, I've been mentored by the former dean of the largest psychoanalytical institute in Los Angeles, PCC, Dr. John Tabakin. And every single week, at least once, if not twice, we review cases. And the idea is, how is our biography, what we go through, how does it dictate, how does it contribute or cause our biology? And this is not a new idea. If we go back to late 1960s and 70s, Dr. Habib Davanlu, who was one of my teachers, he was a surgeon. When he went to Harvard to do psychiatry residency, and he came out with intense short-term dynamic psychotherapy. And out of what he contributed, a lot of people, you know, came out of that, which John Sarno, MD, wrote the Healing Back Pain, which is a, you know, bestseller. It came out of the offshoot of the teaching of Dr. Habib Davanlu. And there are many other physicians. So this idea that if we don't metabolize our emotions, it can contribute to physical symptoms. It's scientific, and we know it by now.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that, because it makes me think about it. When you and I were talking about having you as a guest on the show, a lot of people might be sitting out there and thinking, Jennifer Hill, you're doing a show called Get Yourself the Job. Tell me why Dr. Siddiqui is joining you today. And for me, it really does all integrate. If you're in a toxic work environment, if you are unhappy at home, or you're experiencing great loss, great stress, that's going to have a physiological side effect on you.
Absolutely.
So what would you suggest, Dr. Siddiqui, if you have somebody out there, let's say that they are in a toxic work environment. They go in every day, somebody, it's the Devil Wears Prada personified. That person is berating them, putting them down. How can that person, if they're having some sort of physical ailment or manifestation of that, how are those two things connected, or are they connected?
Absolutely. I think the greatest job that we can get is our own health. Because
I love
it really is. because usually when I lecture, I talk about the greatest wealth being our health.
Mm.
You know, when you look at chemotherapy, it's $65,000 for every treatment every week. I mean, there's significant. There are people that I know that they lose their livelihoods. They lose their homes because they want to survive and they want to go through different treatments. So let's look at the idea that the greatest job is our health. That should be our responsibility, and that should be number one. Because if we don't have health, there's no way that you can go out there externally and get a job or get anything done. And we know how our health directly correlates to our effective productivity. If we have a headache, we have pain, if we have, you know, if you're going through something as simple as a cold, the PMS, chronic tension, panic attacks, depression, well, of course, it's going to affect your productivity, right? So I think you're really nailed it, and you're going to the root cause of the problem. And the question is, well, look, the reality is that this is where I'm at, and I have coworkers or a significant person that's overseeing my work, and they might not be as conscious as I am, or their level of expectation of me, or the way that they communicate is such that I perceive it as belittling, berating, violent.
Mm.
So number one is you ask yourself a question of, well, how did I end up here? How is my external reality is a reflection of my internal reality?
Oh, I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
It's how am I berating myself internally that this is an echo of what's occurring inside. Now, I share this not from a place of blaming or finger pointing, but as a place of learning and discovering and getting the job done, which is our evolution of consciousness, right? Which it's my development, it's my responsibility.
Hmm.
No one else, right? So that would be number one. And number two would be if we can change the conversations, we can change the environment.
Wow.
Most people, they really are not present. You see, I've been caring for you for so many years. If I can't really observe you to be present to the experience that we're having now, then it's very easy for me to go into the concept of Jennifer Hill and take you for granted and not be present and just keep regurgitating old thoughts, old patterns, old feelings, old emotions. And that creates an emotional set point or persona.
Okay.
And that's where most people live. And it's not, I mean, you listen to people and they talk about, my boss is a pain in my neck.
Yeah,
right?
Neck.
My boss is a pain in my other end. And then you'll see that they do have chronic neck pain. They do have hemorrhoids.
Wow.
Right? It's, I'll give you a case, young lady that used to have recurrent urinary tract infections, and she couldn't, you know, she would go in and they would put her on multiple antibiotics and various different things. But when we looked at it, when we opened it up, when we started asking open-ended questions, we found out that her rate, her diagnosis, her symptoms, onset of urinary tract infections was consistent with her beloved, her husband, an attorney, getting a new secretary.
Oh, no kidding.
And yes, and somehow she felt that her space was invaded and she couldn't connect the dot, and this was affecting her physiology. And that's really how our biography dictates our biology.
Yeah, you would never even think about that. And I love what you said about looking at the words. Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating because from a metaphysical standpoint, I Uber everywhere. And it was funny, just today I had a gentleman who was my driver, lovely guy, and was talking a little bit about the failure of his company. And throughout the 20-minute drive that he was taking me from point A to point B, he used the words, it's hard, I can't, it's unfair, this person did that to my business.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed personally, and I would be interested in your insight physiologically and from a manifestation standpoint, If there is a correlation to success or failure, lack of health or vibrant health related to how we speak about our circumstances, if we go around in life and we say, my boss is a jerk, this is tough, I'm afraid, I'm scared, it's not to diminish or to say to walk around all day and be an automaton and just pretend that you're happy, but it's to catch yourself in the way you speak about it. For example, if you were feeling frustrated, say, wow, you know, I had this opportunity come up to look at my scenario from a different standpoint. It's very disruptive for me, and I'm learning to work through this disruption and find the healthiest way to, you know, to engage with this.
Yeah, and you're masterful at this, Jen. If I may, as your family doctor, you know, I've had the privilege of witnessing what you've gone through, and you've gone through significant challenges. But the way you communicate, and the reason that I accepted your invitation and I'm here, is because I have so much respect for you.
Oh, thank you.
Because there's such a consistency between who you are and what you believe in and what you preach, okay? Mm. That consistency. Our language is the difference between being a victim and being a victor.
Oh, I like that.
That is the secret, really. And this is not about putting on, you know, rosy glasses and seeing everything half full. No, the reality is that things occur. You know,
crap happens.
People, yeah, shit happens. It really does. Thanks for giving me the freedom to be able to fully express myself. Yeah, look, things happen. Now, the choice that we have is the interpretation that we give it. There's so many people that they go to work and they're miserable because they look around and they see shit everywhere. And there are people that they go to work and they're looking for the pony. Mm-hmm. They're like, wow, if there is this much shit everywhere, where's the pony?
Yeah.
Like, the pony is, how can I use this for my own upliftment?
Mm.
How can I learn from this? And a lot of us, look, being a human being, a lot of us, we're going through our days and we continuously are regurgitating on our thoughts. And these thoughts, talk about metaphysics, these thoughts create neurotransmitters, right?
True.
Serotonin.
And dopamine.
Dopamine, serotonin, melatonin, histamine, norepinephrine, and so forth. Now, these chemicals, they create feelings.
Mm.
Now, feeling horny, feeling happy, feeling hungry, you name it, feeling angry, feeling frustrated, sad, depressed. Now, these feelings, they upregulate, they shift and change our hormonal system.
Wow.
Growth hormone, testosterone, pregnenolone, progesterone, DHEA, estrogen, estrone, estradiol. Now, depending on what you regulate, the orchestra that you create creates an emotional set point or personality or a temperament. And, you know, there are people that you just meet them every single day and they're locked into the same temperament.
Mm.
They're sad all the time. They're unhappy all the time. Now, to be able to shift and change this, I think that's why sometimes things occur for us to have an opportunity to, you know, to look at it and to be able to create a juxtaposition that gives us a spaciousness to move into the next moment with a lot more freedom.
So let's talk about that for a minute, Dr. Siddiqui. It sounds great in theory. I'm going to be very straight with you. I'm going to talk to you as though I'm a listener out there who says, okay, Dr. Siddiqui has gone to medical school, you've gone and gotten this master's, and that makes sense to somebody who's had the time and the space to do all of this education. Mm-hmm. How do I, as a layperson, when I literally have to go into my office tomorrow morning and I have to see the face of that person who's being a jerk, and they're going to be a jerk, they're going to be passive aggressive, he or she is going to yell at me, maybe they're going to be manipulative, and it's not my fault. What would you say to that person?
The first thing that you do is you create this spaciousness to feel your feelings. What does that mean?
Hmm.
There is a specific form of writing, journaling, that I recommend. I refer to it as purged emotional writing, 12 minutes a day, Pew 12. You sit down and you talk about that person, the boss, the secretary, your colleague, the boot next door, whatever it is. You sit down and you write whatever is present for you.
Okay.
You put it on a piece of paper. And then you look at the judgments that you're having. See, what are the judgments that you're holding against them, right?
Yeah.
And then you go into, there's specific language that I talk about in the book of using the language of forgiveness and forgiving yourself for judging that person and forgiving that person for doing whatever they've done against you. And then you can actually subscribe to a new reality that so-and-so, John, Jack, Jill, they, you know what, yesterday up until now, they've done what they've done because this has been the highest level of consciousness that they have. Not that instead of you taking it personally, that they're doing it to me, that they will always do this to me, because we're not aware how we keep creating a false evidence appearing real, and we send it into a future that hasn't even occurred.
Mm.
And we don't even give the possibility of shift and change for the other person. By cleaning up the language that we use, we'll be able to create a spaciousness so the other person can grow into something larger. And that's very practical. Anyone has 12 minutes. You can start your day by just sitting in your car when you park and just write and declare and set your intention. What are you committed to creating for yourself today?
I love that, Dr. Siddiqui. I completely agree. In fact, one of the techniques that I personally have employed for many years is our intention multiplied by the action we take.
Mm-hmm.
So say, for example, you're taking the action, which is a huge step. You're doing this journaling, this very intentional purging of the garbage that you would normally say to somebody. And that's dangerous in and of itself. That's one of the reasons so many of us have these unhealthy, unhappy, toxic work environments is gossip.
Absolutely.
We go around and we tell everybody what a jerk Betty, Sue, Sam, whoever the person might be is. So it's the intention of, oh gosh, if I had it all my way, could I find something good about this person? In fact, can I share with you an exercise that somebody once taught me?
Of course.
So I was in this program years ago. I love Landmark. I had done Landmark education many years ago. And there was this very confrontational exercise. It was the seven-person exercise. So you pick five people in your life that you want them to be successful. You want them, like, I want Dr. Siddiqui to be successful, my mom, my dad, my sister, my significant other, whoever it is. You want to listen for all the good things to happen. Because we listen a certain way. There's a certain filter that we listen and observe people through, right? So we can all get on board that with that, right? That's an easy task. Then you pick your number six person. Your number six person is somebody who you don't interact with, but you want really good things. It could be a leader. It could be a celebrity. It could be somebody you really admire. And no matter whenever you read an article about that person or see them on TV or wherever you might encounter them, you just listen for their greatness. You listen for something good. But here's where it gets funny. You choose your number seven person. Your number seven person is the person you don't want anything good to happen to. They're that person who is the nails on the chalkboard, the person who's been a jerk, who's bullied you, who's done all those horrific things to you. And the first thing you do with that number seven person is you find one thing about that person you can relate to about them. They might be a father, a mother. They might, you know, be male. There's so many different ways that you could relate to that person. So once you find the one relatability piece, you then listen for that person's greatness for 6 months. So this is a game you play. The five people you care about most, the sixth person you wish you could influence in a positive way, and the number seven person who you wish nothing good for, to listen for something good in them every single day, whether it's on the news or if you encounter them in person. And I just found that exercise for me transformed how I perceived other people and myself and how powerful our listening really can be.
Absolutely. Our listening and the quality of our listening is everything. You can see this especially in parenting. If when you're parenting, if you really listen and look for our children doing things right, that influences what they do.
Exactly.
That influences what they do. And we know that this is the law of entanglement.
Yes, I was just reading about that too. That's the observer principle, and by observing the thing changes.
That's it. The observer is observed. And this is the process of entanglement, or what I refer to as dovetailing, that you know, that we know. It's a physical law. But if I am expecting you to be kind, to be generous, that you're going to host me, we're going to have an incredible dialogue that it will be very soul-filling for us, and hopefully will be inspiring for your listeners. If I'm bringing that with me, that's the Wi-Fi, that's the morphic resonance that I'm creating. That's the context. One of the people that in the acknowledgement I thank and I'm so grateful for, it's Werner Erhard.
Oh, so you know Werner. It's
absolutely
so funny. A couple of my friends know Werner,
one of my
too.
Teachers and, you know, and the founder of Erhard Seminar Technique that eventually became Landmark Forum and so forth. So, and one of the things that Werner talks about is the quality of our listening. The quality of our listening, or if he refers to it as the context, and how context precedes the content. The content is that my boss is an asshole. My boss does this all to me. My boss is this. These are all content.
Yeah.
The context is the quality that is inside my consciousness, how I see that person. And my context precedes the content that I walk into. And no one teaches us that.
Yeah.
No one does. And when you look at the medical model is based on being a victim. The medical model is based on being sick. You know, it's because look at, I mean, so many patients, they come in and they're given stage three, stage four, lung cancer, pancreatic cancer. And the first thing that they tell them is, these are your statistics. I publish my entire medical records. One of the things that I was told is that, you know, you have 70% chance of metastasis, you know, for the cancer to spread everywhere. I chose to walk away because I realized that, they didn't say you have 30% chance of survival. They said 70% chance of metastasis. But somehow I got lucky by the teachers that I had, and I was able to work this and create the juxtaposition, this spaciousness in here, so that I could take a year sabbatical from medical school and start traveling through Mexico, learning the whole arts of what's a curandero? You look at the Spanish language, which is one of my favorite languages. Why? They don't say, I am hungry. I'm not hunger. They say, yo tengo hambre.
I want to eat.
Right. I have hunger.
Oh, I have. Yes.
Yes. I have, you know, this. Instead of I am, this idea of misidentifying with cancer, with multiple sclerosis, with depression, with just the gamut of all these diagnoses that we have, it creates a mindset, which is the mindset of a victim. And it gets us pulled into being entrenched in it. And then our language, we keeps regurgitating and
reinforces it in a negative way.
That's it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. In fact, one of my mentors and I were speaking earlier about, he said, Jen, what was it? How were you successful in your last company? How did you build it? How did you sell it? Mm-hmm. And what really occurred for me was accountability. I was my own accountability person.
Yes.
Where if we can be accountable, just, it's so funny, Dr. Siddiqui, last Monday night, I was in Miami with a friend, and I was like wearing flat shoes, flip-flops, and I had one drink, but, you know, that was it, one drink. But as I'm walking out the door of this hotel, my flip-flop gets caught in the back of the door, and I fell. And it was not a graceful, like, lovely fall like you see in a movie. It was like a thunk-thunk, like all over, you know, hotel people come running to make sure I'm okay. And I am just sitting there laughing, and I'm like, oh, this is hilarious, because I knew I believe in cause and effect.
Yes.
And I had been a jerk to somebody the day before. And I can see it and just have a little giggle about it. Now, some of you out there might be saying, what is she talking about? But whenever we do something, if we say an unkind word about ourselves or an unkind word about somebody else, or if we're reactive in any way, the law of nature is cause, effect, energy. Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. So if we put the energy out there, it's going to boomerang back to us. It might boomerang back the next day, a week, a month, a year, 10 years later. But the more that you get, you're the creator of the of your own world, and nothing is ever happening to you. Because I could have just as easily said, oh, that floor was slippery, or the makers of my flip-flops created bad flip-flops. But I was able to go, how could I be accountable? Not that it's not to your point that you blame anybody, Dr. Siddiqui. It's that you go, huh, if I were the creator of this, how might I be accountable or a participant in how this happened?
Absolutely. This is the law of karma.
Yes.
Right? This is, you know, from every aspect. You look at the work of Bert Hallinger.
Okay.
Wrote a book called Love's Hidden Symmetry, which Bert Hallinger is the founder of Family Constellation.
Oh, okay.
And which is the idea of transgenerational trauma.
Okay.
That, you know, there is, you know, the sin of the father, so to speak, as it's discussed in the good book. So this idea of being decent, this idea of being responsible, this idea of really showing up and taking on life as an opportunity to want to learn, to want to grow, that's how you get the job done. Because the reality of it is that there's a little tennis ball. And there's 7.85 billion of us on this tennis ball called Earth. And it's rotating around itself, and it's rotating around that giant basketball that's a million times larger called the sun.
Yeah.
And as it rotates around that, as you get closer, you create a season of summer. And as you get further away, that's winter. And in between, you have fall and spring. There is a mystery. I mean, how is this tennis ball floating? We're in the middle of this cosmic ocean, right?
Yeah.
So once you look at it from that perspective, you create a context that is larger.
Mm.
And from that perspective, you start paying attention and using a language that oozes self-responsibility rather than mind-shaming yourself and others, rather than creating guilt, rather than wanting to jiu-jitsu others and corner them. And in defense, they don't know what to do, so they attack you.
Yep. Yeah, it's so funny you say that too, because when you're talking about just having a different language and a different way to interact with people, I was shocked yesterday after this TEDx thing I was at. Bill Lau, which is this famous entrepreneur, was there, and he was telling me about the coding dojo, and it's so cool. I guess he created this thing for his sons because he wanted them to have this experience, because they were kind of introverted, to go out and to, you know, have communities. So I think it's called, don't quote me on this, the coding dojo, or a dojo coding, which teaches people in underprivileged areas around the world how to code for free. But you know what he said? The only rule of that school is there's only one rule. Be cool.
That's it.
That's it. Like, that's could it. You imagine, Dr. Siddiqui, if we walked out of here, and just like, be cool. You know, just be kind, be cool. You can replace it with whatever you want. But we become such reactive taking human beings. And when we take and we take, then we start to feel guilty and ashamed. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes
a vicious cycle.
Yep.
That's really the essence of I'm wearing Love Button.
Oh, yes.
And as you are, and this is, you know, the Love Button global movement. It's the nonprofit that my wife and I, we started, and we had the privilege of, for the logo, to be a host at halftime show when one of our ambassador, Chris Martin, who wears a Love Button almost for past several years, and halftime show when Coldplay played, and they requested everyone to hold a placard on both sides of the football stadium, and it basically said "Believe in Love," and it was this logo. 111 million people watched that.
That's amazing! Yeah. Congratulations!
Thank you. And the tagline is really simple: it's pause and love. You know, loving act. If you're wearing a Love Button, you know, there's certain etiquette that you subscribe to.
Mm.
You know, being cool. You know, listening from a place of heart. Fullness, you know, seeing the essence in others, the whole concept of namaste, or I salute the God within you, seeing that beauty instead of seeing everyone with the lenses that they're against you and they want to get you and they don't want your highest good, you know, wanting that which is may not be necessarily for your highest good, but the highest good of the community, paying attention to how the importance of connectivity to your health, to your happiness and the happiness of the community, being part of that. That's really what it means, you know. So being cool or pausing and loving, it's the essence of what it means to be a human being, you see. And sometimes we forget that within the cluttered life that, you know, if you wake up with the alarm on the cell phone on your way, you get on your social media, you're checking your email, and you're sitting there. Now you can't pee, you can't poop, you're constipated because you read an email or a tweet or an Instagram that you didn't like, right? And that sets you up for a day that you become defensive. You keep feeling that you have to defend yourself, or you don't like it, or you're in a bad mood. Of course, that's going to affect our physiology, and we can't get the job done, because that is the primer, that is the consciousness that we're going to take with us into the job, and that decreases productivity, our productivity, and the productivity of everyone around us.
Yeah, I would love to ask your thoughts on this. Somebody once said to me that before any important business meeting, be sure to do some stretching, whether you do yoga or just like sit on the ground and just move your body a little bit in, you know, to kind of expand yourself. Mm-hmm. Because they said if you have a flexible body, your mind becomes more flexible.
It's continuation of one thing. Imagine that you have a pen. On one end of the pen is your body. On the other end of the pen is your mind. The highest state of when you read the founder of Iyengar Yoga, okay, yeah. He talked about this. And when the highest form of yoga is Rajal Yoga, which is the yoga of the mind. The essence of yoga and some of these poses, it's to really open up your body. Because as you stretch and you open up your body, you literally carry molecules of emotion that Candace Perth, the researcher at NIH, wrote a whole book called Molecules of Emotion. Our body, our physical body, holds on to molecules of emotion. So by stretching, you literally are creating a blank canvas of creativity, of possibility, and you take that into the business meeting. Of course that works, right?
I had never heard it before. I just thought it was such an interesting concept.
Brilliant. A lot of the things, these are age-old wisdom. You know, one of the things that you, under Department of Defense, there is a department called Department of Pardon. So, and it's usually headed by a person who is an attorney, JD, Judiciary Doctorate, as well as a PhD or degree in philosophy, doctorate in philosophy. So if you want someone to be pardoned, you fill out an application, you send it to Department of Pardon, they review it by a committee, and if it's approved, then they'll send it to the President of the United States for their consideration. I studied every single language of every single modern day president that we've had. You know, they pardon. When they pardon, they say, by the power invested in me as the President of the United States, I pardon so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And some of these people, they've done horrendous acts. And once they're pardoned, no one can touch them.
Wow.
Right? Now imagine every time you're taking a shower in the morning, and as you're preparing to go to work, imagine you're standing under the shower. And allowing, as the water is washing you, allowing yourself to be baptized. And you literally out loud say to yourself, by all the resources invested in my creation, I forgive myself and I forgive others.
Wow.
Just doing that.
Oh, I got chills. I love that.
And starting your day that way. And I'm here to tell you, not only our physiology changes, but we become an effect for the shifting and changing the physiology of others and allowing all of us to move forward on the evolution of our consciousness.
I just have chills. I don't really know where else to go from there. Yeah. It's so powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
It's my privilege. Thank you for having me. And thank you for doing what you're doing and the conversation that you're starting. It's very easy to be, relatively speaking, with all due respect, it's very easy to be a listener. But to take a stand and to want to start a different conversation and take the initiative, I'm very proud of you. And thank you for doing what you're doing for all of us.
And thank you for everything you do, Dr. Siddiqui, and for all the things that you don't even know that you do, and the time you give up with your family to be here and to help all of your patients. If you ever get a chance, he's hard to get in to see, but he's wonderful. Maybe mention that you saw him on the show and maybe he'll see you. But no, he is really just an incredible healer, and your whole entire team. Every time I walk into your office, it's like walking into a womb of love. Like you just walk in and you just feel embraced by everybody there. And I really mean it. You should go by his office. So Dr. Siddiqui, please tell our listeners what are some of the books you brought with so they can find out about it, or information if they wanted to find out about working with you, where would they find that?
Sure. So the clinic, it's called Beehive of Healing.
Yep.
And Beehive, ofhealing.com, beehiveofhealing.com. I write regularly on Patreon as well as Medium, and they can follow me on the social media at Dr. Habib Siddiqui.
Yep.
And I've published two books. One, as you mentioned, is The Clarity Cleanse, and the first one is Within. And then we publish one magazine once a year. It's called MegaZen, and where we publish our thoughts. My beloved wife, she's a pediatric dentist, orthodontist, who practices alternatively. She's actually the brain in our family. She's Ivy League trained.
Wow.
And we share a center together, and in Agoura Hills, California.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Siddiqui. And for those of you tuning in, actually, I was just talking to Dr. Siddiqui offline before he joined us. This coming Thursday morning on Awake TV Network, or Awake Network TV, I think. It's a brand new network that just launched last week. I actually am going to be doing a show that's going to be more based on the metaphysical and how people can harness metaphysical techniques in business and personally as well as professionally to have greater success and happiness in the world. And so that'll be airing at 7 a.m. and that'll be this Thursday, and it'll be every Thursday. I just signed up for 12 episodes for a season with Awake Network TV. And Dr. Siddiqui, we're going to have you on for one of these episodes so we can do a deep dive into the metaphysical and really get down and dirty with it.
It'll be my privilege. I have so much love and respect for you and the conversations that you're starting. It would be my privilege.
Oh, thank you so much, my friend. Well, thank you to everybody who's tuning in out there today, and whether you're listening now or in the future, you know, we're so thankful to have you as our listeners and to get to share these thoughts with you, because everything does exist in conversation.
Absolutely.
And who knows, Dr. Siddiqui, maybe a conversation, part of our conversation today might spark little fires, little conversations, fires of the mind that kind of pique our ability to think differently about something, so that whether you're encountering a loved one who you may be feeling reactive towards, or you go into the office tomorrow, if you could just imagine putting on a different perspective. Imagine putting on a pair of glasses tomorrow, and those glasses are the intention that Dr. Siddiqui referred to. So you sit down and you think of all the stuff that's driving you crazy. You journal it out, put it on your iPhone or write it out. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, choose your intention. How do you want to perceive yourself for the day? How do you want to perceive the world? And with that comes great power. Then you can start to be the creator, the painter, the sculptor of your world, rather than just somebody who is reacting to the circumstances around you.
Amen. Very well said, and light to that.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Siddiqui. And if you missed any portion of today's show, as a reminder, you can find it later in the week on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. Please do leave us any feedback, any ratings. That all helps us to grow the show and understand what makes a difference for you out there. And additionally, you can also find the show on latalkradio.com. Channel 1 under Get Yourself the Job. So we invite you to tune in next week, and wishing everybody a happy pre-Thanksgiving week. Thanks so much for joining us.
Take care, everyone.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.